Hello and welcome to How to Save the World podcast.
I'm Waveney.
I'm Tim. And we've got a special political guest, I guess would be the descriptor today, Luke Wejohn, 18-year-old, who is running for the Green Party in Jacinda Ardern's electorate of Mount Albert, which I used to be in. Am I in it now? I think
you're
I am in it.
Yeah, I
used to be Auckland Central and they resigned it.
It's good that you know that.
Yeah,
I should have done
that.
That
was the first test. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, they clumped all of us lefties together to make sure Nikki Kaye could win Central.
Gotcha.
But we'll take it back from her.
I see. Yeah. Well, I like that fighting spirit nice and early. So, Luke, welcome to the show, first off.
Thank you so much
for taking the time to come and join us in the studio today. And you're a real interesting cat. You've got to be one of the youngest people ever to run at the national level, I would have thought, because you've only recently turned 18.
Yeah.
And you're youngest on our podcast.
More importantly.
Yeah, more importantly.
That's a real milestone.
I'm going to chuck that as my Twitter bio. So the Green Party has a few 18-year-olds running this time. Someone to look out for is the amazing Lord Esvanor, who alongside me was one of the leaders of the school strike for climate and was incredibly important in decolonizing that space to make sure it is open for everyone, no matter your race, your how able you are, no matter how, you know, what, where you live in the city. She really was a key part alongside others in opening that up.
What's her name again, sorry?
Lourdes Vanor.
Brilliant. Because we had Sophie Hanford on the show.
Yeah, she said, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And it just, I said it then, I'll say it again. I'm so impressed with you guys. Like, if I can lump you as a category of person. Like, young people that are out of the ballpark in terms of you are committed, you're intelligent, you are actually making a difference. You don't seem like you're waiting for anything.
Well, you just don't have any time.
No, exactly. I think that's what's coming through. Eh? You were 17 when you said, yeah, sure, I'll go up against Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's been a bit of a path, eh? Like, I started the school strikes in Auckland last year, which ended up getting 80,000 people out in the streets, which is the biggest single protest in New Zealand history.
Amazing. So you were one of the original coordinators of that.
Yeah, so me and a mate who ended up dropping back for other reasons. So I was Chloe Swarbrick's youth MP and she was Julianne Genta's youth MP. And we were like, once we saw the actual politicians and had conversations with them, we were like, holy heck, they just don't get it, do they?
Wow.
And
we...
Youth Parliament used to be so inconsequential. I can't believe it's actually birthing MPs now. I did it when I was...
Did you?
17 or 16. It's, yeah, I was in the press gallery for
weird
it.
Oh, nice.
It's a weird place. Yeah. But it's like a lot of my criticisms of Youth Parliament, I realised were actually criticisms of actual Parliament. And then it's like, oh, damn.
Oh, damn. It's just our political system.
Yeah, like just the whole colonist Westminster system that all sorts of issues, not a sustainable system, basically. And then I realised that actually the problems I had with the people at Youth Parliament and the system at Youth Parliament was actually amplified by real Parliament. And I still want to get in there because when something's wrong, we've got to fix it.
Nice one, dude.
Yeah.
And so you've mentioned decolonisation a couple of times already. And I know that your two big issues are, if I may put words in your mouth, income inequality and environmental issues as well.
Yeah,
You're proudly a Tūhoe member as well. So these things all sort of seem to interact together for
you. Yeah, I guess equality and climate action basically lumps in a whole bunch of things because, of course, we can't have one without the other. And when you're talking about equality, it branches off into that people are respected, that as a nation we feed our hungry, we house our cold, that a Māori and a Pākehā can stand as equals, that a young person and an old person can stand as equals, because there's lots of people and politicians today who like to cut the country up. They like to say there's a huge rural-urban divide. They like to say that climate activists aren't protesting them and their inaction and their failings, but climate activists are protesting old people.
And you've heard that said.
Oh, yes.
Right, out of it.
We have, well, you live rurally yourself.
I do.
We have farmers who on the bulk live paycheck to paycheck, are forced by companies like Fonterra to do incredibly unsustainable practices. We know that mental health is a huge issue for our farming community. And then politicians like to say, oh, all those kids, they're protesting you. So, of course, when you hear
it's emotive
that these, you know, youngins are trying to have a go at you, on top of everything else, it's like, of course that's something that's scary to you. But, yeah, it's. I feel like that's why it's so important that we have kids in the cities calling out the politicians who have screwed up our cities and have made them unsustainable, whether that's through transport, through our waste, through everything. And then we have kids rurally who call out those politicians for creating this dirty farming that on top of stolen land.
And obviously you'll be able to speak to the environment from which you come and the context that you've grown up in and been around your whole time as well. So it's not like you can grow up in central Auckland and be like, oh, nah, those guys in the Waikato, they're shit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, something just on the school strikes. I feel like it's incredibly powerful having everyone on the same day being able to say we had 170,000 or more kids in New Zealand and millions around the world on the same day standing up for this. But at the same time, it kind of inevitably, in the way our media works, means that cities like Auckland and Wellington get more attention because you have, you know,
that's true.
You have your videos and photos of 40,000 kids outside Parliament. You've got kids from K Road to Britomart just jamming up all of Auckland City. And it's like, of course, that gets the photo. And what gets missed out is that actually small towns that got 50 kids out have a much higher portion of that town there. True. And is a much bigger achievement. And I feel like having it all on the same day maybe isn't the best route for making sure everyone's voices get heard. So it'll be very interesting with coronavirus, how the school strike movement does respond to that, and how they make sure that everyone's voices can be heard. So there was like talk of rolling strikes where they'll start at the top of the country, move to the bottom. So when it's in Auckland, they'll be talking about more like our second biggest emitter, which is transport, and how years and years of politicians have decided that basically we will be a country that sits in traffic for a huge portion of our lives, that our cities will be designed around cars, not around people and not around communities. And then you'll have rural areas to be able to call out our most emitting sector, which is agriculture. And I feel like that's a better way to do it, but we'll have to see how we do that online now, probably.
And then how is it affecting campaigning as well?
Oh, it's crazy.
Because I read that you really do enjoy that process, that physical process of walking the streets, knocking on the doors.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I've been campaigning for the Green Party. Well, one of my earliest memories has been in the pushchair with pamphlets on top of the pushchair.
Hang on, you can remember that.
Yeah, like
that's freaking memory. Were you? How old were you?
I was probably about 4, 5, yeah, 3, maybe. Yeah. one of my earliest memories is my mum putting probably Russell Norman's face in the, maybe, yeah,
into that'd be right, yeah,
a letterbox at that time. And then from there, it's shifted from me pulling them, from them pulling me, pushing me along, literally. To things from me dragging them in.
Can you speak to that a bit? Because that's been an interesting thing that younger people have been accused of for time immemorial, but particularly at the moment who are getting politically active. Greta Thunberg is a good example of this, where there's some pretty cynical older people who say, oh, you've been brainwashed by your parents or older people around you. Do you feel like you have inherited all of your views from your folks?
Not all of them. There are definitely colourful dinner table discussions. But my parents, I am incredibly lucky that they loved me unconditionally and that there was never the expectation that we would do all the things that me and my siblings do. So my brother's a professional athlete. He's used to sail around the world before coronavirus happened. And my sister's amazing, but she's like 12, I think.
and no career yet.
Yeah, but although I'm incredibly proud of the things me and my siblings have achieved. There was never a pressure for us to do anything. They basically said that their approach is a full fridge and neglect.
I like that.
And
as a middle child of four kids, I can relate to that.
Yeah, and as long as
offhand
we were
parenting.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. As long as we were like good people that were kind to others and ourselves, then they were happy with whatever grades we got, with whatever attendance. So my attendance last year was like 32%, and they kind of figured I was doing other things, so that's fine.
Let's not skip over that. The 32% attendance, and my understanding is that you have also turned down a scholarship to Victoria University.
Yeah, so I got 32% attendance, but I basically I really grinded in year 12, because that's the one for any young people listening. Work real hard in year 12 and not the other years. Because year 12 is the year that universities look at when they're dishing out scholarships. And then I had my eyes set on one, and I said, what are the minimum requirements for year 13?
Yeah,
to keep the scholarship if I get it. And it was a merit endorsement, which is 50 merit credits. So I was like, okay, I think I got 52 in the end.
Nice.
And then like there was probably an attendance requirement of about 30%.
So skated just above that.
Yeah,
so fantastic.
Just literally by the hair on my chin getting everything in. But
what was the scholarship that Victoria offered you?
The Kahotea scholarship. So that's their 30K, 3 years, like all halls paid for, fees paid for. I didn't like get rid of it entirely. So I deferred it for a year.
I see.
So it's an option sitting there if...
Yeah,
if
so
you don't beat Jacinda.
That's another thing we need to get to later. But no, so yeah, if I become an MP this year, then I will probably have to turn down that scholarship. And if I don't, then I'll take that scholarship. Yeah.
What was the selection process for the... You don't just get to go, hey, I'd like to be a candidate. What was the selection process for that? As far as you know, why was it that the Greens said, yep, well, let's... take the 17-year-old on.
Well, I was actually asked by Labour and by Top, probably, if they're still a thing, and by the Greens. Yeah, and I think National's taken on an 18-year-old as well. So it wasn't like, at that point, it wasn't the Greens being as radical as a lot of people think they are. But yeah, I just signed up like anyone else and was like, yeah, I want to... There was, you have to be a member, but not even for that long. I don't think there is a requirement for how long you have to be a member. I have been a member for years, though. And then when it came out that they were looking for candidates to join the pool, I was like, hell yeah. And just went through all that process. It's like an interview. There's, you submit your photo and your bio, and then you go down to a candidate conference where it's basically if you've seen a beauty pageant... But, yeah, yeah.
We were going to get back to the versus Jacinda bit.
Yes, we were. So, yeah, I get a lot of that normally from international media that don't understand MMP. So, as you guys know, we get two votes in this country, one for the person you want to represent your community.
Yes.
Which the Labour candidate looks quite strong in this community. and then you get the most important vote, though, is your party vote. Because... unlike countries like America, we're not electing a president here. We're deciding what is the percentage makeup of our house. What parties, what ideologies do we want to have strength for the next 3 years? So that's why I'm going for the party vote only.
So where are you on the list?
List hasn't been announced yet.
Okay. So when does that come out? Later.
Yeah, not sure. There'll be an initial list, which is done by some delegates, and then there'll be a... Then it ultimately comes down to the membership and is pure democracy. So if any Green Party members are listening, I'm looking for top 10, eh? It's
hugely contentious, isn't it, the party lists that come out, and it's really, you know, hard fought within the party to try and get up the ranks for the reason you just described, because it can determine whether or not you're going to get into Parliament.
Yeah,
you like, as an individual.
Yes
politician.
And no. There is a bit of that, but it kind of at the same time, the candidates are the only other people who know what you're going through, and and most of our cases are our best mates. So Lord Des is a real close mate of mine, and we've been mates for longer than we've been candidates. Steve Abel is like, who's announced he is a living legend, and to be able to work alongside him is just a dream in itself. And then Julianne Genta was one of the reasons and ways I got involved in the Green Party. Chloe Swarbrick's been an amazing mentor. Madama Davidson has been handing me a megaphone since I was like 12. It's like,
this. How did that feel?
Huh?
How did that feel to have the megaphone in your hand at 12?
Oh, yeah. So at a TPPA protest, Madama basically saw a kid that I think we were family friends, or my parents knew her or something. And I'm not sure if she was even at politics at that point, or if she was just a hardcore activist that she still is. And she basically saw a kid with too big a mouth and handed me the megaphone.
You know what this kid needs? A bigger mouth.
the green approach.
Well, you're quite big on that, obviously, because you mentioned that before we started recording, that you've got a real desire to be talking about ideas rather than people, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. So that comes back to also my criticisms of youth parliament and real parliament. And this is pretty international, that movements are behind faces and names. So you've got Greta for the school strike movement, and that's millions and millions of people who can show up in person and people who support who can't show up. And it's all behind a face and a name. You've got the Bernie Sanders movement, and unlike Joe Biden, which is, you know, a person backed by billionaires to become president is what he's trying to do. But Bernie Sanders is a movement, you know, and I haven't got a solution to this, but
I'll also say, as an American political junkie, this has been recorded. I'm going to anticipate probably moments before Bernie Sanders has announced that he hasn't dropped out yet, but it's probably quite soon.
You reckon? Yeah.
Sorry to bum you out. So your face dropped to the ground.
It's weird to record things.
So time, we've got no clue. Time,
but what distortion. I'm saying is, he's just an example we don't need to dwell on, but that I dislike how movements of people, whole movements need representation with a face and a name under the current system of parliament, that you have a candidate running when actually the candidate is a small cog in a huge team of volunteer coordinators, of campaign managers, of they do the fun stuff. We get to talk to nice people on podcasts, whereas there are people putting in the hours behind that.
Absolutely.
And it's like,
these are your policy advisors, the activists on the ground who are pushing things forward.
So to talk about yourself and to talk about people and brands and names is kind of missing the point. And it's what actually it is ideas, and it's getting people and movements around our values and our ideas and what we being everyone, want New Zealand to look like.
If you could get one change out of your involvement in campaigning and being involved with the Green Party, is there something that really instantly comes to mind?
Everyone voting. So today... today's government is put in power by about 50% of New Zealanders. So it doesn't actually it doesn't have the mandate of the people. And those 50% of people are the oldest, the whitest, the people who are most benefiting from the current system are the ones who re-empower that system. The housing crisis at the moment is not going to be solved by all of the people who benefit from the housing crisis. Only our generation who, look up and see that we actually won't be able to afford a home and won't be able to have a lot of the things that our parents had, we are the ones who are going to be able to change it. The current government and governments of the past have been borrowing from the future.
Yes.
And we're seeing that in climate change. We're seeing that in a housing crisis. We're seeing that in inequality. And the only way we're going to stop it is by everyone voting. So if I could get one change, like, definitely I want people to vote Green. Of course I want people to vote Green. But if you're not going to vote Green, at least bloody vote.
You're uniquely placed being 18 years old yourself, out of high school as of last year. but also being obviously, well, running as a politician this year to try and get into parliament. So I imagine there's a little bit of a phenomenon that you've got a bubble of your friends and inner circle who are quite politically minded, but you're also an 18-year-old dude who I'm sure has a lot of different kinds of friends.
Mm.
So what do you think is the big challenge to getting youth out to vote? Because this is not a new problem or a problem unique to New Zealand. Like, why is it that young people don't vote?
There's a bunch of reasons. It's because the current governments and past governments have not been there for young people. So you think if there's this whole machine that turns against your interests, what am me, my one person, going to be able to do? What's my one vote going to be able to do? But the thing is, you're not one vote. You know, we saw that with the school strikes. You're a group of people. We're a movement, and that can make change. So it isn't about you. It isn't about me. It's about all of us. And maybe one person walking down Queen Street yelling about climate change wouldn't have changed anything. But when we organize, when we unite together, 80,000 people doing it does. And maybe one person won't flip the entire election. But 80,000 people is hugely significant. And if you don't want to vote because you don't think that you're going to make a change, and your mates don't want to vote because they don't think they're going to make a change, you know, we've got literally millions of people sitting at home thinking that their one vote isn't going to change anything.
Oh, it's such an irony, isn't it? It's such an irony.
Yeah, but that's just part of the, that's just one part of the problem. The other part, now there's two more I'll get to, which is the media and also the Labour and National government, mainly National, but sorry, parties, not government, always. And when it comes to Labour and National, they're completely complicit in people not understanding how our system works, and in people not voting.
How so?
If you're put in power by low voter turnout, you're not going to want to increase voter turnout. If you're put in power by people not understanding MMP and thinking we're still in this two-horse, first-past-the-post race, you're not going to want people to understand that. You get, I had a Labour person come to my door and basically say a party vote Labour is the only way to get Jacinda as Prime Minister. And I was like, sorry, can you explain that one more time? So none of the coalition partners put her as prime. And I basically asked them, well, does the Green, and they clearly didn't know that I was pretty political and a outlier in that sense. But and asked, well, would a party vote Green put her as prime minister? And they were like, no. And they're completely complicit in trying to push this. And it's lying. It's literally lying to keep your population not understanding how the system works so that they continue to vote the same ways they've always voted. And it's like, actually, if we taught it in school that we have an MMP system, that a party vote Green also puts Jacinda as Prime Minister, but with stronger MPs behind her to push her to be better on inequality and on climate change, if we lower the voting age so that everyone is casting their first vote at school, not at 18 when they've left school, they've maybe gone to a different city for university, they're not sure where they're enrolled, if they're enrolled. If we make it so that everyone casts their first vote, which is the most important vote, say on a Wednesday, a public holiday, they go into school like they always do with their mates, they cast their vote, and then they go over the rest of the day off.
That is a really good idea.
Yeah,
and why not?
If that's how we do it, then we're going to see 90 to 100% voter turnout of that generation who's just making their first vote in school. But the evidence says that when you cast your first vote, you continue to vote for the rest of your life.
So that's why your first vote's the most important.
That's why your first vote's the most important. That's why if we do that once, you know, we will create a wave of voter turnout, and we will have a country growing up with my generation that actually has a parliament, a House of Representatives that is truly representative of the people. That is how we fight inequality. That is how we fight racism. That is how we fight climate change. Not with the richest people, not with the people who benefit from the system, continuing that system.
Is there any official party platform around that or policy around introducing civics or education about our political system into high schools?
Yeah, no, it's everything I've spoken of right now, luckily, is Green Party policy. And the more when I was deciding to become a candidate for the Green Party, I knew my values aligned with the Green Party, but reading all of their policy and just everything made so much sense. And everything aligned so clearly with my own views. It was insane. And the small parts that didn't align, I knew the party had such a strong inner democracy that I knew that goes from the bottom, from the grassroots. I knew that I could actually get in there and change parts of the party, which you just don't see in Labour or National. They're so top down. You know, there's so much power held in those parties by one person sitting at the leadership seat. And it's like, I'm so happy to be in the Green Party where we're accountable to the members and where the members make the final decision on the list ranking, make final decisions on policy, on all of that. It's the way to do it.
And so what's your beef with the media, Luke?
Oh, yes. So the third part. yeah, you guys.
we're new media, mate. Yeah. We're cool. We're the cool kids.
No. So I was saying there's three parts involved in why young people don't vote, that question you asked. And this is why I love podcasts, because we can actually answer questions in parts and talk over everything. But it's the system not working for you, so why would you vote? And you're not thinking that your one would, that you alone would do anything. But and it's understanding that we are a movement, we are not individuals, but the current system likes to push this individualism on us. Then it's parties who are completely complicit in it and want to further that. The third one is that for a good story, for a soundbite, media run the story like it is a two-horse race. You know, every election year we have a leaders' debate between whoever's leading Labour and whoever's leading National. And to anyone who's been following American politics, anyone who's been following any country that elects a president, it looks like we're doing the exact same thing. We're not. And to have a leaders' debate without every other leader of all the other parties you can vote for that also have equal, if not more, strength per vote in Parliament is just... It's misleading.
Well, and when we've seen in the last few years any coalition government, and you see how much, like you say, arguably more power those smaller parties had.
How much power does Winston have?
Well, exactly. Yeah. He decided proportional, who our Prime Minister
was. Proportionate to who. I mean, it's bizarre how often, you know, the old kingmakers come through and decided how it's going to be.
Gets decided by this government without Winston Peters or Marama and James Shaw.
Yeah, and so pre-election you're saying this guy's not even necessarily on the stage because we're painting a story that it's not so important.
Exactly, it's a story. And it's not just the leaders' debate, it's everything. It's when the election is announced, you have Jacinda saying, "Here's the election," and Simon Bridges saying, "We're going to win." And it's like, sweet, there's our story. It's simple. A six-year-old could understand it. And it's like, I get why that is, but we need to come past that. We need a new media where people can actually understand and dissect the system that we basically the media is still living in the first past the post age, and because it's just a simpler story, and that's dangerous to people trying to understand your system. Because if you're trying to understand how our country works, everything is stacked against you. There's no civics education. The two major parties who you hear from through the media don't want you to know, and it doesn't benefit the media to actually inform you. And then those politicians like to use longer than normal words and like to use an absurd amount of acronyms to make people feel like politics isn't for them, to push away the people who don't vote, to keep them away. And when you don't vote, you have the disproportionate effect of reaffirming their power. And that's what they want. That's why they pretend politics is high and mighty. That's why they pretend you need a degree to understand it. You don't. All you need to do is care about things, whether that's your family, your planet, whether that's that people in this country, while we're in the most, you know, well, until recently, we're in the most profitable, productive time, yet we're working longer hours and our rents are higher and our pay's lower. If you care about these things, you're political. If you like your air fresh, your water clean, if you, you know, want every aspect of your life, the quality, the quantity, the accessibility is all decided by political decisions. That is scary, but it also is empowering because we can change the system. We can change politics and we can make it work for us instead of us working for it.
Speaking of changing things.
Hell yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your vision specifically for the environment in sustainability that you would like to see New Zealand go in. And also sort of the second part of this question is like, realistically, what do you think we can achieve in the next little while if the right things happen?
Yeah. So the IPCC, for those who I just talked about politicians using acronyms.
Oh, well, I was going to pull you up on
it. Yeah. So all of the coolest scientists around the world got together and said, not we're going to make science, but what is the best, most solid science out there? How do we put that all together to have the final, undebatable, updated knowledge today of climate change? And that says that we need to cut our emissions by 50% in the next 10 years. And we need to go net zero by 2040, which is not the current plan, really.
Or the current trajectory. Yeah.
And then also on top of that, we are a modern, rich, first world country. So if we expect this from other countries, we should actually be doing more because we can. So then the that's a like scientific detailed breakdown of, you know, what is actually needed. But the vision is very different. The vision is that our farmers can farm for hundreds of years and know that that will be always be there, that we can always have a fair relationship with Mother Earth, with Papa Tuanaku and us. The vision is that people are not sitting in traffic for hours of their life, for, you know, by the end of your life, probably years of your life, sitting in traffic, that instead we can have community gardens where intersections used to be, that light rail can quietly arrive every couple minutes, kids can laugh as they bike to school on a separated cycle path without a fear in their gut of that climate anxiety. It's like we can definitely create a better New Zealand that works for us, that is designed around us, that is designed around people and the community, not cars and growth, 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 growth.
It does seem like a win-win to me. I guess that's why I'm here. If we don't do anything, like we've already got we've got the advances and we've got the great stuff in terms of the direction we've been heading down for the last 10,000 odd years. But these are the unintended consequences of this direction we've been heading in, which is now really starting to balloon on us and really fast. You know, we're saying now we're the first generation that knows that we are ruining the planet.
Yeah, because that also information had been hidden by oiling companies. Well, yeah.
But I mean, even that's only one generation ago anyway, like if you take it back to the 70s. But it's like, it's just happened so fast, and we're ready now for these new stories. And we're ready now. It's like we're to turn it around and not just focus on looking at what's happening if we keep going down the same path. Because we can already see that there are, I mean, yep, sure, there's some great stuff, but yes, there's some issues, and those issues are really things that are compounding and we need to pay attention to. So I really like what you're saying, Luke, around forget about all of that. We know that it's there. What we really need to go focus on is a really better world.
Yeah.
Not just because we need to in terms of climate change, but because actually we want to, because we're sick of a few things that we don't like about the way we're doing stuff. Like loneliness would be an example. You know, it's a bizarre sort of a little outworking of our current state, I guess, whether it's the economy or the technology or just a whole bunch of things that have come together to create a huge amount of loneliness and then even anxiety that we have for all sorts of reasons. But it just so happens that the solutions for climate change fix a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we destroy our renters' rights, we destroy our workers' rights, we create a gig economy which in reality means you're moving houses a few times a year, maybe once a year. You're moving your jobs all the time. You don't know your coworkers. You don't know your neighbors. You can't organize. That is what creates it. And as we see that everything is connected, that means we can actually fix it together. And I completely agree with the stuff you said about, as a whole, our generation just being the first to be completely aware of this. Because, I mean, a few years ago, before this huge uprising in climate activism, Greenpeace, who are awesome, would have to talk about oil spills and would have to talk about oil on top of penguins and fish and stuff. Like, that was the sad thing. because they weren't able to address the fact that actually burning oil is worse.
Yeah, because you need the image, right? That's what people operate on.
And people would laugh if you said climate change. And then now contrast that today, where 7 out of 10 people feel personally threatened by climate change. But so as a whole, we've gone our population has made huge strides culturally, and where we're lacking is in our laws, is in our legislation, and we need to be pushing that to be where, you know, our country would be
catch up.
Comfortable. Yeah, catch up.
There's always a lag, eh? And there's feel like that's the space
there's
we're
often
in.
A lag. Like in 99% of the cases, there's a lag. Then you get some amazing people like Sue Bradford, Catherine Delahunty, who actually use their power as politicians to go for something better and further than the population is even ready for. If you think about all of our biggest achievements, it's activists inside or outside of the House pushing the country to be further than it's ready for yet and winning. So Kate Sheppard, that completely divided the House and won and good. but there are people, although the population has just caught up in terms of climate change now, there are people who have been who've known this forever, and Jeanette Fitzsimons is one that comes to mind. She just passed and was a huge mentor, and she knew from day one that the system of infinite material growth on a materially finite planet wouldn't work. Our indigenous Māori, we knew that we need to be in balance with nature to have a truly sustainable system. Like, it isn't exactly rocket science to think that founding a nation off of murder, colonization, stealing land, and then exploiting all of those people, and then exploiting all of, you know, bringing people from, colonized people from Ireland and from Scotland to New Zealand and telling them that they're better than Māori, so don't think about the people above you, and keep working your shit hours and your shit pay and your shit jobs, and then treating Māori even worse with often forced labor. It's like, of course, building a society like this wasn't going to turn out well, and exploiting all of your people and exploiting the whole planet was not going to work well. And it's just taken a while for people to click that actually it affects them too, this whole entire system of it.
You're in a very holistic way of looking at all these things, Luke.
You've got to.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's all pieces of a greater whole.
Yeah, but the lucky thing is that a lot of the things that fix one issue, because it is holistic, fix lots. So if you think free public transport, that fights poverty. That means that I was hearing from a guy on The Benefit who basically said, well, he cried when he heard that he got the $25 extra thing, because he's like, now I'll be able to afford enough gas to go see my parents. I've been missing them and I haven't been able to afford to see them. And it's like, free public transport fights poverty and climate change. Mm. Building climate safe state houses, shifting our housing blocks into ones that are climate safe, and building state houses fights poverty and climate change. Community gardens fights poverty, the ecological crisis, the climate crisis, and climate change.
Mm.
And yeah, food, nutrition.
Yeah, all
just
of
a whole
the,
bunch of stuff. Yeah.
That's the good thing about it being holistic. You can find it all.
Sorry, you also lobbied the government when the zero carbon bill was going through. Do you want to talk a bit about that? And because I don't know as much about that bill as I would like to. What are your thoughts on how it landed and what it needs?
Were you part of Generation Zero?
No, I left Generation Zero because I had some. Well, not left. I never really joined. I have lots of good mates in Generation Zero, but I disagree with their theory of change. So that's just not going to be a compatible fit for me. And also, I don't have time now. And when I was at school and I did have time, it wasn't really, it was more of a university kids thing than a school age. There was literally not really any space for school age kids until we started the school strike movement. And that's why I think it's so important we keep it a school age thing, because that's something in Auckland that is very unique to Auckland and a few other towns in New Zealand. But most of the school strikes around the world are run by adults or university students. But that's why I have left now that I've left school, because it's like, this isn't my space. Mm. We invented the space for school kids to be able to have a say and have a place to exist among other people who think like them.
Sophie Hanford said a very similar thing when we had her on as well.
Oh, cool.
The coordinators, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to the the zero climate bill.
The zero
carbon bill.
So it's a lot weaker than everyone who fought for it would have wanted. And that's because, as we said, we need to get NZ First to sign up for anything. The fact that National also got on board was a result of the school strike for climate. That's what they've said, is because of that pressure, because of the shift in the populace, means that they got on board. And that has been awesome for people wanting to invest in green business. So whatever your take is on that. Which means that that was good to be able to make sure everyone was united, because people are looking at markets all over the world and they're going, America, Trump, and, you know, if Boris Johnson, Scott Morrison, that when people set up green businesses, they could, with the switch of a government, be completely screwed over. We know in New Zealand that with the National Party backing the zero carbon bill, that green business is safe.
Huh.
But which is the advantage of having them on board. And we had to weaken it for NZ First anyway, so may as well get them on board.
You know? And if there's one thing business doesn't like, it's a lack of security about what's going to happen.
Which is why we bail them out whenever the stock market crashes.
Yeah.
Because they can make then as risky decisions as they'd like, and the taxpayer will always be there to pay their bonuses. The theory of change difference I had with Gen Z and the zero carbon bill was what we were talking about earlier, about polarization before you unite the country around a good progressive idea. And we've seen that with nuclear free, we've seen that with giving women the vote, and then somehow with abortion still today. I think that we should push for the strongest possible bill that we can just get over the line, and then when National becomes, then they can cry about it all they like and say that they're going to gut it when they get in. But when National does get in 3, 6, or 9 years' time, climate change will inevitably have continued even more, because even if we go zero today or backwards today, there's still so much stuck in the atmosphere that it will have progressed. We will have had more fires, floods, extreme weather events. The sky will have gone red even more. And there's no way that they're going to be able to reel back climate action 9 years from now. I think we need to go as hard as we can, as fast as we can. But ultimately, that isn't a problem of... I think the zero carbon bill is as strong as it could be when you're in government with New Zealand First. So, of course, that's the only feasible approach, is to then get everyone on board for the market reasons. That is also, you know... That's also good. But ideally, you'd have a Labour-Green government with the Greens pushing Labour to do the strongest possible climate action that we can. I mean, David Attenborough says we cannot be radical enough. So really, that is where your party vote Green is the most effective use of your vote. Because then, with enough party votes Green, we can have a Labour-Green government, and we can have the Greens pushing them to go further and faster on all of the things they say they'd like to do.
Feels like a pretty good specific note to end the conversation on. Is there anything else that you want to put out there, Luke? We've covered quite a lot of ground in this conversation.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. You know, I feel for the farmers. I feel for the people working in oil. And it's like, we need to increase benefits. We need to provide a support, a safety net for everyone to be able to move out of industries that are hurting our country and into green ones. These industries are dying, and we are the only ones with the plan to move them into ways where we can empower all of the people and the planet.
Mm. Well, whether you wholeheartedly agree with what Luke has been saying in this episode or you disagree, if you go to vote.nz, you can check your... sign-ups that your electoral status, is that what it's called? Your voting status. Check that they've got the right address for you.
Yeah, that you're registered to vote.
That's it, your registration. Yeah. And make sure you do that as early as possible.
Thank you to the Green Party. You can enroll on election day.
Oh yeah, that's a brand new thing, huh?
Yeah, well, we're just trying to remove all the barriers to get people enrolled. and to get people voting. So ideally, we'd just get rid of enrollment at all and have everyone automatically enrolled.
Well, look, if you go early, check now, because we do have same day enrollment now, which is fantastic, but you don't want to rely on it because it's a new system.
And yeah.
Who knows
enroll
how it will go in its first year.
Vote.
Yeah, and get everyone else to as well. It's so easy. Vote.nz, you can just you put your full name in there and your address, check that your registration is up to date, and then you'll get all your voting papers and everything will be super easy for you. Okay. Luke's social details are in the show notes of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Luke Wee-John, who is running for the Greens this year against, and Jacinda Ardern's electorate. Thank you so much for joining us and having
a
chat to us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.